Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hour number 2, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Friday. And we're excited. It is time to talk some drafts, some football with our man Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach of the Innsworth Tigers, who joins us now. Tim, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're good. We're a little tired, but we're kind of reacting to everything. Let's just start off the top here. Carnell Tate goes 4th overall to the Tennessee Titans. None of us really saw that coming. What'd you think about it?
Yeah, I guess we maybe everyone was in that boat. I was watching it with my kids, and they were like, "What?" You know, like it was just the surprise was real, and I guess I would say this. We've talked long enough, Chase. Like I think you know, like I do feel like the draft is, there's more attention on the draft than I think I ever want to give it power to having, because just my experience as a player is that like half of the guys that would get drafted were never any good.
Yeah.
You know, and you can almost apply that to every round. Now, obviously you can change your franchise by drafting somebody that is really good. So, you know, that I understand the excitement around it, but I've always kind of felt like it's like a 50-50 proposition. So in saying that, I have no idea, ultimately what kind of, receiver Carnell Tate's going to be. I will say it was a real, and I was surprised by the pick, and I think a lot of people were, but if he ends up being an unbelievable wide receiver, then it was brilliant. If he doesn't, then guys are going to look around and be like, how the heck did, Reuben Bain goes all the way at whatever he was at 12 or later. I forget where Bain went, 15 maybe. Like, we could have had him. What were we doing? So I think that's just my reaction.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair one. As a coach and a quarterback, you're aware that there are going to be certain guys on a team that are going to get – you're going to throw the ball to or try and get the ball to more. And that was the case with Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State when Tate was there. So with that said, do you think the Titans looked at it as, well, he's probably better than maybe his numbers show just because he played alongside Smith and wasn't getting as many targets?
Sure, and I think because of the – talent that has come out of that school, I think there's probably an element where you go like, well, yeah, but if he was at Arizona State, then he'd have done the same thing that the Tyson kid was doing. Yeah, I'm sure that you can kind of talk yourself into that stuff. When you see somebody's measurables and you see, some of the things they have done. But that would still make me nervous. I'm just, it would still make me nervous. I've been on a lot of teams. It was like, well, this guy should be better, but the other guy is better just because he just produces more. The quarterback trusts him more for whatever reason. He's more detailed, more reliable. So, I think that's where, drafting on projection, for a guy that doesn't have production of other guys that high, that would make me a little nervous.
Tim, you think they could have traded back and gotten Tate 9th or 10th?
I mean, it feels like it based on the surprise. You never really know. You'd have to go talk to everybody in between and, even people that were, in an arm's distance, of them, that were behind so that they could get up in front of them, but it feels like you could have. And so I think when you see that, you wonder, I mean, and it's not just them. I don't think the Rams had to do what they did to get Ty Simpson. So that happens every year, and it's not going to matter if you end up being a really good player, but it does feel like that was super early. I think you guys played it on the on the clip coming out of breaks. This is the highest the Titans have ever drafted a wide receiver.
So they drafted one overall in 1965, but as the Titans, yes, sir.
Yeah, and so you like, I mean, and that information alone, you know, can kind of give you the, you know, a sense on that. Like, what Corey Davis was pick what?
Five.
Five? Wow.
Yeah. All right. Let me ask you this, though. If Robert Saleh is as good as a developer of defensive talent as there is, I see why they skipped over Reese and Sonny Styles, because they can get Falk at the end of the first round. He can develop guys to become all. So I'm good with that, right? It's just that, to me, Tate's got to come in, Tim, from day one and contribute. No hamstring issues, no asthma. No, I don't understand the offense. He's got to play, right? From day one, he's got to come in here and contribute.
Yes, and I think I've talked to you guys about this in the past. You know, Hembo from ESPN, who, you know, works on Get Up, you know, he did a study where basically he looked at certain positions and their bust rate as first round draft picks. And, you know, the marker for whether or not you were a bust was, did you get a second contract with the team that drafted you? And the highest bust rate by position was
wide receiver.
And like, I don't think that that's not even, you know, I guess something that, I mean, like, I think Titans fans have lived that.
Right.
I mean,
like, right.
You know, in recent memory, right. I mean, I just said Corey Davis, yeah, obviously Treylon Burks. So, and I mean, and even in a weird way, AJ Brown. So, you know, who I guess he would have been second round, no? So,
yeah, like, that's right.
I just think when you, like, that's another thing for me. I've been thinking about the positions a little bit where you go, look, there's a reason. And so now you take a guy that wasn't the most productive player at his own school. And, you know, I think it can make you hold your breath.
Yeah, it is. You know, and it's just, if they build this, though, Tim, is like, look, we got to get Cam playmakers. We got to get him playmakers. He was the best playmaker out there. I'm on board with that, because it's kind of what the Colts did in the late 90s when Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark, all of a sudden, you had to build around Peyton because you believed in him. If Borgonzi tells me that we need playmaker, I'm okay. Now I got to see it on the field.
Yeah, and listen, he's going to have the last laugh if he ends up like Reggie Wayne or Marvin Harrison. He's going to have the last laugh and be like, what were you guys talking about? Look how good he is. And so, look, and we don't know. It's what I said kind of at the outset of it. I'm just saying, you know, if you're just playing the percentages on, you know, how this has worked for wide receivers and what it typically is like and that stuff, like, that's, you know, unfortunately, you know, the history of drafting wide receivers extremely high. And I would also say this, just based on where it was. Like, the receiver I loved in the draft was the Casey Concepcion. Like, had some of his games as a young kid and when he was at NC State, and then obviously went to A&M and was really productive there. Like, if they get decent quarterback play in Cleveland, that guy is going to be a superstar. Like, he just, because of his versatility. So I just, there is an element of, you know, okay, you do have to consider, like, the delta between Tate and the next receiver, you know, when you're also talking about, all right, what's the delta of, the edge, you know, the linebacker and the next linebacker that you would get a chance to go get.
Well, and I mean, I almost wonder this, because Floyd one time said if he could have gotten away with it, he would have drafted a quarterback every year. It doesn't matter the round. The position is that important. Could you almost say the same now about wide receiver? Because they're so hit or miss, but they're also just as important.
Yeah, and then what happens is, you know, people would say that about quarterbacks, and that was kind of a Ron Wolf thing where he was like, look, I'm going to draft a quarterback every single year. And they did that, and they were one of the few teams that, like, it worked out, because it was it was Green Bay, and they had guys that were coming through there, whether it was, you know, Aaron Brooks or my brother or, you know, guys that like they had drafted in later rounds and then they ended up being starters somewhere else. Mark Brunell, like guys like that. It's like that's three guys that the Packer organization under Ron Wolf, you know, had drafted and then they had ended up being starters somewhere else, which means, you know, they presumably got some, you know, compensation in terms of trade value for those guys to become starters. You know, the problem with that philosophy, I would say, is go look at the list of quarterbacks that, you know, were drafted in the fifth and sixth round that ever became starters for more than five seasons. The list is really short. You know, Brady's going to be on it. You know, my brother's going to be on it. But like, by and large, Brunell will be on it. But like, by and large, there are not a ton of guys that fit into that. So while like, it sounds great and other teams have tried to do it, there aren't a lot of organizations that have had success finding a guy when they draft him, you know, in those spots. So, you know, that would be what I would say about that. However, at receiver, you can go find go to every single team, and maybe that's an exaggeration. Go to 2/3 of the teams in the NFL and say, like, all right, like how good is a receiver that they have that was drafted in the third round or later? And there's going to be a really good one. There just is. Like, that's how it works. So I do think kind of spreading the wealth at that position every year, investing in it, does make sense. You might find your Puka Nacua.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us here on the program. We'll have more with him coming up next. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Friday, continuing our conversation with ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck and the head coach at Innsworth. Keldrick Fault goes 31st overall, Titans trade back in. Now, I'm hearing different things on him of potentially the steal of the first round.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of people had, you know, the main focus on, you know, like you think about the guys that were talked about pre-draft, you know, as edge rushers, guys that could develop, you know, it seemed like, you know, it was probably three guys that dominated the conversation. Wouldn't you say? Like, you know, it's hard for me sometimes to gauge. And, you know, and a similar thing happens at quarterback. So, you know, I do think that there is an element of, you know, the media perspective about like the top guys at the position and then, you know, maybe how somebody feels about, well, listen, like number four in that mix, you know, some people think is as good as number two in that mix. And so, yeah, you know, kind of similar to what you were saying about, you know, Robert Saleh, his ability to, you know, develop and see things in people. I think that, you know, I think it's one of those ones where you wait and see and trust and you go, okay, well, like now I know why you weren't in that game at the beginning of the draft, because maybe you felt like, or at round one, you maybe felt like at the end of round one, you could find exactly what you were looking for.
Tim, just about every grade on this draft choice is an F, and we're talking about Ty Simpson to the Rams. Look, I get it if he's going to go and sit there for 2 years, but Sean McVay's body language, Tim, told me everything I needed to know about this pick.
Yeah, I don't think it. Like I would say, like, if you're going to sit for 1 year, fine. But if you're going to sit for 2 years, I think you're in a tough spot. Like, you know, because now, you know, first off, you got to hope that there's no injury, right? It's a little bit like what happened with Trey Lance, where he gets injured. And so, like, now you don't know. It's what's happened with Anthony Richardson. You know, he gets injured, so you don't know. So your window to evaluate the quarterback that you took in the first round shrinks even more. Mm. So you better hope that after sitting 2 years that there's not an injury in there, because at some point you're going to need to say, like, yeah, we're going to pick up your fifth year option. And when you pick up the guy's fifth year option, now all of a sudden it's like a 1 year deal and you're paying who knows what the quarterback money is going to be on the fifth year option on that. Right.
Yeah.
So it's going, you know, it's going to end up being a lot. So for a guy that you have no idea at that point, like if he can play, just because he hasn't played enough. The other thing I would say is this: I do think he needs to play. He only started 15 games in college, so taking 2 years and not playing, I don't know how you get better doing that. Like it'd be like saying to someone, like, you're going to play the hardest position in sports, but you're just going to watch somebody do it at a high level, and then we're going to expect you to play like a first rounder when you get your chance. Like, I think it's really hard.
Where do you think he was going to go? Because I think nobody saw this at 13 to the Rams.
See, to me, I thought someone trading back into the first round to get the fifth-year option on a guy that has not played a lot, when you consider that guys that have not played a lot of football, that have been drafted in the first round in recent memory, it's not been great. So, Anthony Richardson, Trey Lance,
yeah,
like guys that didn't have a ton of starts in college, it's not gone well. So, I think that, like, so that's why I was surprised, like, at how early. The other thing I would say is this. Like, you know, you're looking at McVay's body language. You know, Matthew Stafford says publicly, I think at NFL Honors, hey, I'm coming back after winning the MVP. Like, this sounds like a little familiar, right? Like, Aaron Rodgers, like, hey, I'm still playing. I'm playing at MVP level. I'm coming back. And, like, and then the team, rather than getting you help at linebacker or receiver because your star receiver is, you know, got some off the field stuff going on.
Right.
You know, who knows how that's going to go. You know, your other receiver is whatever he is, 35 years old.
Yeah.
And hey, we're going to draft a quarterback. When, by the way, your quarterback room, you know, there's things up in the air. But Jimmy Garoppolo still could probably be convinced to come back.
Yep.
So yeah. I like whatever you thought McVay's body language is. I don't care what anybody says. Stafford finds it out yesterday. There is no way he's happy about it.
Oh no! And then McVay comes on and says, you know, what are you planning on with Ty Simpson? He's like, well, he's got to beat out Stetson Bennett first for number two. And I was like, oh man, that's a deep cut right there.
Yeah, well, and he's saying the coach stuff. But, like, if you're Stafford, you're like, wait a second, man. Like, we were really close last year, and I played at an MVP level. And this is and you guys were, you know, begging me to give you an answer early so we could help figure out our plans. And so I do that. Like, to me, if Stafford would say, like, hey, look, I'm going to make my decision, you know, on June 1st of whether or not I'm coming back.
Right.
Well, then, like, the team's got to make plans. You know, that's a little like the Favre-Rodgers situation, where like Favre, you know, poor Ed Werder, you know, was living in Mississippi outside Favre's house trying to figure out if he's going to play or not.
Right,
you know,
that's right.
Like now, like, you know, Stafford's back. So to do this when your quarterback, when your backup situation wasn't terrible, I think it can disrupt your team, especially for a team that's always kind of operated with, hey, we'll deal with the future later.
Yeah.
It feels a little weird.
I get it. Last night, another telling moment to me was Reuben Bain going 15 to the Buccaneers. You know, when they walked into that long hallway, they had the hats laid out for them. They put the hat on and they posed in the mirror. Reuben Bain just grabbed the hat, walked out, hugged Goodell, and he was gone. I think that man, Tim, is going to be on a mission for a long time.
All business. I told you guys about some of my interactions being around him, calling some Miami games and talking to Jason Taylor, who coached him. And the guy's all business. It's funny you say that, Joe, because I thought the exact same thing. Like, he probably doesn't have a TikTok account. I've probably never danced in front of his phone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And quite frankly, it's probably how you want your defensive lineman to act.
Yeah, exactly.
I do think that we have with all the coverage, you know, in different styles of coverage of the draft, we have also entered into a period now where the judgment on the guy's success based on his suit, his the party he's throwing, like all of those things, you know, his girlfriend and his mom's reaction. Like we now can decide how good a guy is going to be based on, you know, the party and the attire that a guy has on draft day.
Exactly.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us here on the program reacting to the draft. So we covered the Ty Simpson thing. What was the other big surprise that either did or did not happen in round one?
I thought Love going as early as he did to where he went, like, didn't really see people ever mock that. Right? I mean,
no,
yeah.
And I like that one. I mean, look, I was talking with you guys about, like, is that too early for the Titans to take him? You know, like, is that, could they do that? I mean, that, there was definitely some thought that that was the case. So for him to go prior to that, I would think that that had to be a surprise to a lot of people. Not because he's not a great player, but, you know, there. I mean, I had seen some stuff with him at outside of the top 10. So, and maybe that dictated some things. Like, you know, we'll never really know the answer until, you know, years from now when guys are gone. But, like, were the Titans planning on going running back instead of receiver? Like, they might have been. So that was a big surprise to me. So, you know, Simpson was bigger, but I do think that just based on, you know, what people had been talking about prior to the draft. I mean, Adam Schefter, I think at one point, I said this to you guys, at one point Adam Schefter said the Titans won't take Jeremiah Love. You know, assuming that, like, he 100% is going to be there when the Titans are picking.
Yeah. No, I you did. You definitely said that, and that was something that always kind of stuck in the back of my mind. As you look at tonight and tomorrow with the Titans in particular, they currently do not have a second-round pick after moving up. We know the O-line needs. What are some things you think that Mike Borgonzi and Robert Saleh are going to be looking at tonight and tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could look at getting back in. I would doubt that they, you know, get back into the second round just because of, you know, moving up, I think, the value of it. And then obviously, you know, what that does, you know, for just as you fill out your roster, kind of to your point about, you know, addressing O-line needs. So I could see, you know, that happen, you know, obviously outside of the second round. So I don't think that they would move into the second round to do that. I think you have to wait till round three, see them start doing that. And then, I mean, I think that that's, once you get past round three, it is, you know, you're not a lock to make the team. So, you know, not that it's always typical to cut your fourth round pick, but so I do think that, you know, when you are drafting, you know, basically from round three on, you know, you're holding your breath in terms of whether or not they're even going to make your year one roster. And, but at the same time, you're like, look, we need to build depth and give guys an opportunity to compete, to make and have an impact on our team. I would think offensive line. And then I would think, you know, some of the things you talked about before in terms of development on the defensive side of the ball, I think every level of the defense.
I'm curious, Tim, your take on the Saints. I've been a longtime Saints fan, not overly like, hey, I'm a Saints fan. I quietly like them. Getting Jordan Tyson, they got Chris Olave, Tyler Shuck there. Are they building something special? Because down the stretch, Tim, they were really good last year.
Yeah, I think the way Shuck played was very good. And I do think that Kellen Moore is an outstanding coach. So, you know, assuming Tyson can end up being a really good player, to your point, with Olave, I think they'll be good on offense. I do. And then, you know, when you look at that division – you know, Tampa, you know, has gone through some changes, but I think that you probably feel like if you are, you know, a Saints fan with, you know, the things that have gone on in Atlanta, you know, the up and downness that you've seen in Carolina, like I would think that would probably feel like, look, we got a quarterback in year two that showed us a lot of things. Like, let's step on the gas some to see if we can support him to be a playoff team by winning our division.
You surprised Chiefs went with two defensive guys. They went with the DB out of LSU and then Peter Woods, the DT out of Clemson, when they might have needed a little bit more offensive help there.
Look, I've thought that they should be a team that's in the market for wide receiver. You know, obviously dressed, you know, running back in free agency. But I think because both picks were on the defensive side of the ball, yes. They've been a defensive-led team to me the last 2 years at least. You know, just look at their offensive numbers the last 2 years. They've not been great. And so now, you know, Mahomes, who everyone's going to expect to be back in exactly like Patrick Mahomes when he returns, you know, they've really struggled at wide receiver. And they have neglected, you know, running back. They addressed that, but, you know, their tight end now is really, really old. So, like, to me, if they would have you know, taking the tight end from Oregon, I'd be like, okay, got it, makes sense. So to see, you know, two defensive picks, that was a bit surprising for me.
He is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the football coach at Innsworth. Tim, have a great weekend. Appreciate it, and we'll talk to you Tuesday.
Sounds good. See you, fellas.
Tim Hasselbeck joining us on the show. Good stuff, because, I mean, I think he feels, especially about Tate, he feels about him, you know, how a lot of us feel.
Yeah, and it's, you know, he's smart enough to know that, you know, hit the field, see what you can do. You could have got him a little bit later on, got assets, but now you got it. You got your guy. You got to come in. You got to contribute right away. You got to contribute right away. And if he can, we'll shut our mouth.
Yeah.
We will shut our mouth and watch him go down the field. If Cam and Wandale Robinson and Gunnar Helm and those guys can create a nice little camaraderie together, then the sky's the limit, man. It really is. Look, at that point, you could have taken Styles and Reese and Caleb Downs and all that, but you got a playmaker, right? So hopefully he does the best for the Titans.
615-737-1025. We'll have more with Chris Sanders at 2 o'clock today. But we'll react to Tim and much more coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Who's this directed at? Today, Vanderbilt baseball takes on Texas at Hawkins Field. First pitch at 6 o'clock, pregame at 5:45 here on 102.5 The Game. Catch it all. It's presented by Gary Force Acura, and the Chase and Big Joe show is presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel. We'll have actor Steve Lemmy join us here in just a few minutes. He's got some stuff going on that he wants to tell you about. 615-737-1025 is our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So the Patriots do pick. Did he speak? I don't even know if he spoke again.
He did?
Post-draft.
Last night, yes, sir, he did.
After the draft, he did?
At the podium, yeah. He was talking about the draft pick. I'll grab it for you real quick.
Well, I don't care. But he didn't say anything before, but I'm curious, because I did see him in the draft room, but he was kind of hiding.
He was. You couldn't see him in there. And, like, it's been fun not to talk about it for the first 90 minutes of our show, which is fine. But there's still a lot that's going on up there, and Moore's probably going to come out with Vrabel and everything. But they took a big lineman last night, which was kind of cool. They needed that. Put a guy at the tackle, move Will Campbell inside for the Patriots. But I don't know, man. That was just an odd, weird day for New England Patriots and Vrabel and everybody else. And those picks started flying out, and people like, oh, my God, have you seen this? Oh, my God, have you seen that? And you correlate that with the Brady news that came out 2 days later. They're not going to go after Brady. And then you see the pictures taken 2 days before. They're at the bar and all that. But that's New England's problem now.
And then there's a timeline with a kid that's kind of starting
my
to.
Lord.
I will. There's a lot at play here. There's a lot of people that are being affected. So I don't want to make too much fun, and like as we talked about, I mean, if he's getting the help that he needs, then we obviously support that. But I mean, there's just Twitter is a cesspool right now.
Well, here's the problem: every meme about Vrabel is absolutely hilarious,
I
don't want to laugh.
I know,
but I'm laughing at all those. I just, you guys in the internet just that create these memes. I don't want to laugh, but you're making me laugh, and I don't know what else to do. Just avoid all what you see right there. But oh man, what a day it was yesterday for them. And speaking of, I mean, overall in the draft, I mean, we talk about the Reuben Bain. There's always the drama, right? I mean, the Ty Simpson drama is huge, and I think Tim Hasselbeck broke that down perfectly. It's like the Rams were so close to the Super Bowl. Puka Nacua is literally almost losing his mind, right? I mean, he's kind of gone off the deep end a little bit.
Yeah.
You had a couple good receivers still sitting. The young man, the Blintnikoff winner, Lemon from USC, Mekhi Lemon was sitting there. I mean, that would have been a great pick for the Rams at 13, and you moved on it. So don't be mad at the Titans, folks. There's a lot of the teams that screwed up last night. And I'm really looking forward to watching Reuben Bain this fall. Be on a mix, because I'm telling you, watch the
video. I think
video.
He's going to be
walking down the hallway. He just grabs the hat, hugs Goodell for like a second, and he's gone.
Yeah, no, I think he's going to be, as they like to say, a problem.
Yes, Yeah, so good job of the Buccaneers to recognize that, and he fell to him and watch him go to work. Really happy for Keelan Rutledge to go to the Texans. We talked about the Texans needed offensive linemen. And I think when they heard his name last night, we were like, oh, that's a good one. We hope he would drop back a little bit so the Titans could get him. But the Texans, I mean, plug him right in at guard, and C.J. Stroud needs all the help he can get. That was a nice – and then – you know, it's funny about linemen, though. Chase, I mean, they like these draft grades. Oh, that's a C. That's a D. It's a lineman. They don't know. I mean, you need linemen to do well to win football games. A lot of these draft people don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was certainly an interesting first night, but we'll see what happens in night two and then throughout the weekend.
Isn't
as well.
Weird about, not weird, but Jermaid McCoy, you know, not going. I mean, he was
I'm not super surprised.
The top 15.
I know, but I'm not super surprised by that. But I am a little, I guess.
Well, the guy the Giants took at 10, the big lineman from Miami, he's got a herniated disc.
Yeah.
I just, man, it's, I know the wear and tear of football, but herniated disc just sounds.
For does those not sound those, fun.
Right. And then you got a lineman who's massive and got to deal with that every day. I don't know. Hopefully he's fine, has no problem with that going forward.
Coming up next, we're going to shift gears for a minute and talk to Steve Lemmy, an actor. You probably know him from Super Troopers. We will discuss what he's got going on with him. Coming up next, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Friday. We'll get back to the draft here in just a little bit with Chris Sanders, but let's say hello to actor Steve Lemmy, who is on the line with us. Steve, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. Tell us a little bit about Rhino Dart and everything you're doing with that.
Oh, well, Rhino Dart is a canned cocktail, an alcoholic beverage I started with a few of my friends from Nashville. It's basically, it's a tequila cocktail with citrus and wildflower honey. 8% ABV, perfect for tailgating at football games, which is what I like to do. And we've been around for a year. You can only get it in Nashville. We're, you know, kind of a little mom and pop startup. But, you know, we're in like 30 liquor stores now in Nashville, and it's an awesome drink. We got more flavors coming. So, you know, I'm down in Nashville all the time, and we're trying to throw parties and get the Rhino Dart train rolling out of there.
Well, so I was about to ask if you were living in Nashville, but why Nashville? Why was that like the place to start this?
Frankly, like my friend who created the formula in the first place, who invented the drink, he moved to Nashville.
Okay.
And so that's where he lived. And so all of the, you know, the guys who got together to, you know, decide to, you know, go in and invest and start this company, everybody's from Nashville except for me. I'm the out of town guy. So, you know, it seemed like the perfect place to launch it to. Nashville's a, you know, party city, and, you know, obviously Broadway, and, you know, for the tourists, but you've got bars everywhere, and the attitude is right in Nashville. You know, like, it's kind of like old school, like just a strong alcoholic beverage that, you know, it starts the party, it ends the party. It's just, it's a party in a can. So it's like Nashville seems like the perfect place.
So, and you're also, obviously, a lot of people know you from Super Troopers and writing that and being in it, and Super Troopers 3, working on that, correct?
Yeah, Super Troopers 3 is basically finished. It comes out August 7th. When I say basically finished, I mean, like, we're doing, like, the final touches now. Like, I went in yesterday and, you know, recorded, like, lines of dialogue that need to be cleaned up and all that stuff. But the movie's awesome. It's our highest testing movie ever. The trailer came out this week, I think on Monday on 420, obviously. That's seems to be our day. And it's already got 49 million views, which is awesome. So, you know, onward and upward with Super Troopers.
It sounds good. Steve Lemmy's with us. Hey, go back to, you had me at tequila on this Rhino Dart thing, right? Big tequila guy here, Steve. Where can I can find this in liquor stores? Where are we talking here?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's about, you know, right now Rhino Dart is available in about 30 liquor stores in Nashville. I know in Midtown it's at Village Wine. On the east side it's at Sinker's. Brentwood it's at Total Wine. Berry Hill it's at Daily Spirits. Those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head. But it's, you know, it's all over Nashville, like I said, in about 30 liquor stores. And we have a website, rhinodart.com. And I think they have the list of all the places you can get it in Nashville.
Fantastic. I mean, I'm looking now. I see it everywhere. So you made my day, Steve. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah, no, it's a cool thing. And really, like, I wasn't being cheeky when I said it's great for tailgates. Like, I don't know about you guys, but when I go to football games, like I actually, and baseball games, at really most sporting events, I actually don't even watch the event. I'm just there to like have some drinks and talk to my friends.
Yeah, you're right. You'd fit in good here in the South with all that going on. Let me go back to Super Troopers. Isn't it crazy when you do a movie like, there might be a few people watch it, then it gets the internet and cable, and it just explodes. How much fun was this watching that movie explode when you're probably like, oh, hell, if we can get five people to go see it, that'd be great.
You know, it's crazy. It's like, so that movie came out in 2001, which, like, I hate to say this ages me, but that was like pre-internet, or the internet was just kind of starting, but like there were no like streaming companies or anything then. And so like that was all about the DVD. Like it actually, you know, our dream was to have Super Troopers in one theater, and this company bought, you know, because we made it for $1 million.
Wow.
So at the Sundance Film Festival, to 20th Century Fox, Fox Searchlight is their independent film division. They put it on 1800 screens. Our dream was literally one theater. And, you know, it did fine at the box office for a movie that has zero stars in it. But then, like, over the next couple of years, this thing just got passed around on DVDs and right. Basically became the equivalent of a viral video. And, like, I remember walking down the street in New York City one time with a bunch of the Broken Lizard guys, and a dude came running out of a bar and was like, are you guys the Super Troopers? We're like, we are. He's like, I'm the bartender in here. Get in here. You're drinking for free. And I was like, wait a second. Is this what fame feels like? Because I like it.
Oh, that's a great story. By the way, I like to look at your bio and where you went to high school. I mean, I'm looking at the people that went to your high school, and it's the who's who of the acting world. I mean, Claire Danes. I mean, Montgomery Clift. On and on. Noah Emmerich, who's I think is a great actor. So I guess going to this school, the Dalton School, you had to go into entertainment, right?
Well, you know, I went to a pretty elite private school. Now I'm going to sound now everybody's like, oh, well then screw this guy. My mom was a teacher there. My mom was the Spanish teacher. I'm just a poor Hispanic kid. My mom was a Spanish teacher there. So I got a full scholarship to go to this place. And yeah, it's like a lot of those people are like, you know, very talented, you know, who's who, a lot of famous people's kids went there. No, you mentioned Noah Emmerich. He was in my sister's class. Super cool guy. Great, great character actor. There's a lot of people who, you know, who went to that school. And yeah, like you said, I guess it was inevitable, but I was actually a professional breakdancer.
No. I discovered
breakdancing on the street, and I got put in a TV commercial, and it was, you know, they paid me $400. And it was me and another guy and then two models.
Okay.
And, you know, I was a kid. I think I was 14. And it was like, and they put a fake mustache on me, which is ironic. And because they wanted me to look like I was in my 20s. But I was like, wait a second. I got out of school. I got paid $400 cash. And I worked with two hot models. And I'm breakdancing.
Right.
This is what I want to do with my life.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And you got it there.
I did it.
Well done. Steve Lemmy's with us here. So how much time do you spend in Nashville now?
Now, you know, I come down as much as I can. I love Nashville. I love the vibe of Nashville. It's changed a lot since, you know, I think I started coming in like 2008. And it definitely has changed a lot. Like Broadway has changed so much
right.
In the last 20 years, you know, I sometimes kind of avoid Broadway, obviously.
Right. I feel that.
But I think I come down every couple months and, you know, we're, like I said, we're trying to build Rhino Dart. And, you know, like tonight there's a Rhino Dart event at Sips and Species at the zoo, where, you know, it's a big cocktail party at the zoo. And then we'll be at the Steeplechase on May 9th. Which is, you know, it was that big horse event.
Yeah, it's a big horse event, exactly.
but we turned it into a tailgate.
That's there you go.
But yeah, and I've been friends with like, you know, you guys are a sports station. Like when I first started coming down back in 2008, 2009, I was friends with the entire offensive line of the Tennessee Titans, like Mike Roos and Mike Otto.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Chris Spencer. And, you know, that was when like, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick was the quarterback and Jake Locker was the quarterback.
Yeah, that's right.
So we would come down. I went to a hysterical. I went to the offensive line dinner. Mike, you know, Mike Roos, I'm still friends with him. I was just texting with him the other day. And he invited me and my friend Kevin Heffernan, who plays Farva in the Super Troopers movies. He invited us down to the offensive line dinner. And we were joking. We were going to, like, walk into this restaurant, and you would just see, like, four zebra legs sticking up in the air, and, like, these guys just be eating out of the belly of the zebra.
Right.
And it wasn't too far off. You know, like one of the guys had it was Big Country was his name.
Yeah, David Stewart.
Yeah, he was there, and he had ordered 3 dozen oysters for an appetizer and wasn't sharing them with anybody. Like, and it was, you know, it was like a conveyor belt. He'd put the oyster on the cracker, put the Tabasco and the horseradish, and eat that. While he was chewing that, he'd be preparing the next one. But he put down 36 of those things.
Good Lord.
Because had bottles of wine flowing and steaks coming in. I mean, it was honestly like, you know, it's like a $10,000 bill.
Good.
And, you know, and they have whoever's the rookie has to pay, but they just take turns, you know, paying for dinner. And you know, I mean, these guys are doing well for themselves. So that was an experience.
I'm sure. We have to ask a disclosure first, Steve, before going any further. Do you have any pictures of you and Mike Vrabel together?
Probably not the kind you guys want to see.
That's great.
Nothing at a resort or anything like that, but.
Oh, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Well, Steve, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today. We're excited about Rhino Dart and obviously Super Troopers 3 as well, but definitely we'll check out Rhino Dart and we'll talk down the road.
Awesome, guys. Nice. Thanks for having me on. Nice chatting with you.
Absolutely. Steve Lemme joining us here on the program. The fine actor, you know him from the Super Troopers movies, and then also check out his drink, Rhino Dart. Crafted for a better buzz, Nashville's one and only premium canned tequila cocktail. Leave the herd, join the crash.
That sounds so good.
You're going. That's right up your alley.
I'm headed to the zoo now. To meet up. Hey, Steve, it's me, Joe. Who?
Get this guy out of here. Coming up next, we'll get Chris Sanders' opinion on the draft and Carnell Tate, much more. We'll do that next. Chasing Big Joe on a Friday, 102.5 The Game.